You're listening to the West End Frame Show.
Hello and welcome to the West End Frame Show, putting theatre in the frame and keeping you up to date with everything going on in the West End and beyond. I'm your host and West End Frame editor, Andrew Tomlins, and today I'm joined by an amazing co-host. She is a theatre journalist writing for Broadway World UK and Backstage Pass. She was formerly press editor for Bargain Theatreland. She reviews everything from new openings, the musicals, the plays, theatrical concerts, and she also sometimes does an interview or two as well. I want to talk about that in a bit. She's also one of my press night besties. We love going and having a Nando's together, and she is a West End Frame Show super fan. So I am so thrilled that she has agreed to do this today. I'm very lucky. Welcome to the West End Frame Show, Kaz Cronin.
Thank you, my dear. Welcome to my abode.
Thank you so much. Kaz has invited me around to her house. I mean, is it Blackheath that I'm in right now?
It is, darling. It's Blackheath.
And I walked in and the first thing that I heard was Laura Benanti singing to me. And I knew I was, you know, in a home from home.
She wasn't in my house. She was just on my TV.
Oh, if Laura was here, can you imagine?
I'd be losing my mind.
So anyway, thank you so much for doing this. What I love most about you, well, there's lots that I love about you, but every week you do this tweet outing me to the world about whatever stupid thing I've said on the podcast. But no, you always write lovely things and you're always listening to podcasts.
Oh, I'm very honoured. Well, I'm super excited. I love your podcast because it's just very you. And that's why I love it. I love your laugh.
There's no pretense.
And there's no pretense. And that's great because it means that the people that you've got, that you're speaking to or interviewing or whatever, it just relaxes them and makes them super chill. And that's really fun to listen to. So yeah, every Tuesday morning on my commute, which is an hour and 20 minutes long, I listen to your voice and it calms me down.
So when did you, I love doing this with kind of other theatre journalists. So when did you first write about theatre?
I think it was 2012. So I was on Twitter just following lots of stagey accounts, as you do. And one of the accounts I followed was a, you know, reviewing site. And they were looking for reviewers. So I contacted them and submitted some examples of my work. And because I've got a journalist background as well as loving theatre, I thought, surely I'll be able to do this. You know, it makes sense. So I started working for them. That was Bargain Theatre, which is sadly no longer around. But that was great. I worked for them for about 4 years.
And you became, you're their press editor?
Yeah, which was really cool.
What does that mean?
Well, so the guy that ran it, Gareth, he started out with a small pool of reviewers and then it got bigger and bigger and then he just kind of couldn't manage it. It was crazy. And then obviously, as you know, with all the press invites that come in and dealing with PR, etc. So I ended up being the go-to person for all of the PR. So all the releases were coming to me and I would disseminate them out to all of our reviewers.
You made sure that there was a reviewer for every show.
Yeah, and get the right kind of reviewer for each show and make sure I'm giving them out in a fair kind of way, you know, not giving, you know, some people would want to always just cover, you know, big musicals. And it was about making sure that sometimes they pay their dues and covered some of the other stuff on the fringe because that stuff's, as you know, just as good. So I started doing that and then that closed down. I had a bit of a hiatus and then came back, started working for Backstage Pass and now Broadway World UK, which is amazing.
With the lovely Marienka Swain.
With Marienka Swain,
who was on the podcast a couple of months ago.
And fun fact, so Marienka was a reviewer for Bargain Theatre when I was press editor.
You were her editor, and now she's your
editor. I was her editor, and I would give her all the good stuff because she's an amazing writer. And now she's doing the same for me, so it's lovely.
Love a full circle,
mate. I know.
Tell me about what's on your like ultimate favourite show list?
Oh, come on, you can't ask me that.
What are your ultimate faves?
I can't even, I don't know. Well, there are lots of things. So I loved Once. And I still miss it. I just think it was beautiful and special. And
it's going
really,
on tour, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
That
I
new
saw that.
Production that was at the New Wosley Theatre.
With the same cast, right?
I think so. I think the same, that's certainly the same leads from the New Wosley production.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder where it's going. I might try and catch it. But I loved Once, and I think it just really took me by surprise when I saw it. And that those shows like that tend to be the ones that stay with me. If you don't really have any expectation and you see it in previews and then you're blown away by it. So Once, and then I really love, I don't know if you remember, Lend Me a Tenner.
Shut the front door. Do I remember Lend Me a Tenner? I saw it twice in its like 2 week run.
Yeah, I know.
It
so
was
sad.
Incredible. Lend Me a Tenner, the musical this is. Yes. It had Matthew Kelly, Cassidy Jansen, Joanna Riding. It had so many amazing people.
Yeah, Damien Humbley. Yeah. Michael Matus. I mean, honestly, amazing. And yeah, I think it ran for about, I think it was 6 weeks. Yeah. I saw it about 15 odd times. I thought that was just a great show.
If anyone listening hasn't heard the album, the cast album, they should, because there's some, I'm so thrilled that they got to do that album. There's some brilliant songs. We've got Cassidy belting.
Yeah.
And you've got some beautiful, more legit musical theatre. There's some Sophie Louise Dan is just a goddess in it. I just think her toilet brush. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a great one. I'm so glad you brought that up.
I think about it a lot, sadly, but I do. I loved it. And Damien Humbley, I've just followed him in quite a few shows ever since because I'd not seen him in anything. I'd seen Cassidy in a few things, so I already knew she was amazing. But yeah, so there's that. I love, you know, more recent musicals. I love Waitress. It's my first Broadway show, so I will always love that. I like the classics. I mean, I like a real mixture of stuff. Mm. I don't really have a favourite. I loved Groundhog Day. You know what? I loved that. 2014, I think that was. Mm. No, 2016. Can't remember.
I think it was 2016.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that comes back one day.
And you have a rule, don't you, with musicals? So if you're seeing a musical, mm-hmm. you will not listen to any of the music before.
No.
Which is quite important. So you like to go fresh and be surprised.
Yeah, because I think for me anyway, without any context, a lot of the time, the score isn't as impactful as it could be. So Hamilton, for example, you know, I'm not really into that genre of music. So listening to that without any context, it would have probably turned me off. But obviously now I've seen it within context, it's amazing. And so that applies to everything. I've only broken the wall for one show.
What was that?
Dear Evan Hansen. Because I just couldn't wait. And it was before the transfer was announced as well. So it was all up in the air. I didn't know when I would get to see it. So I just listened to it.
And it didn't turn you off?
No. So I've been disproven. I've disproven my own rule.
I think that's a good rule. I love going and being surprised. I do sometimes, though, especially when I go to New York and I'm seeing like 10 shows in a week or something ridiculous, I do listen to a few because I know that it'll just help me take it in a bit more.
I guess so.
So sometimes I do, but I try not to judge too much. I know what you mean. If you don't, you can form judgment prior to actually having a proper understanding of something.
I think so.
We have lots to discuss today. Mm. There's lots coming up. Kaz is going to try not to swear for the next 45 minutes. So coming up in today's episode, we are going to be discussing the Les Mis All-Star Concert and Islander, as well as High Fidelity. There's lots of news about Waitress, Life of Pi, and the Palladium Panto. Plus, we'll be discussing Idina Menzel's wicked new movie role. First up, we are going to discuss the news. And news broke this week that we have a big new production transferring into the West End in 2020. So, following its premiere at the Sheffield Crucible, the new stage adaptation of Life of Pi will transfer to the West End next year. Life of Pi is set to open at the Wyndham's Theatre in June 2020, and it's based on the 2001 fantasy adventure novel, which was adapted into an Oscar-winning film in 2013. Do you know what it's about?
I don't.
Let me tell you.
Please do.
So Life of Pi takes place after a cargo ship sinks in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. There are 5 survivors stranded on a single lifeboat. So we have a hyena, we have a zebra, an orangutan, a 16-year-old boy, and a 450-pound Royal Bengal tiger. Time is against them and nature is harsh. Who will survive? So it's... sounds pretty epic. And what is so exciting about it is that all the puppetry design is by the amazing Finn Caldwell, who began his career as a performer in the original company of Warhorse. So I've heard lots of people saying the puppetry is amazing. And I've seen is a couple of production images, and it looks absolutely beautiful.
Wow.
So I'm excited.
So how are they going to stage that then? Because I read in the press this week that the Wyndham's
yeah.
going to be completely gutted and refit.
They're completely transforming it, which is going to be interesting. I like that West End theatres are open to doing this a bit more. We had the Playhouse Theatre was completely redone last year, wasn't it? And they were doing things kind of what was normally the stalls was completely open, and that was all the performance space for the Jungle. So yeah, I'm really intrigued because the Wyndham's is a beautiful theatre, beautiful space. And, you know, I'm excited to see what it's like.
I suppose they're assuming that it's going to run for quite some time if they're willing to, you know, completely gut the whole place.
Absolutely. Well, I think this should have big commercial appeal, hopefully, especially this, you know, Warhorse had huge success in the West End and on Broadway, ran for a good few years, didn't it? So I like that this is clearly a piece that's embracing theatricality and imagination. And
yeah.
I like things that aren't just, you know, movies being recreated on stage in a non-imaginative way. I like things that are creative and embrace theatricality, so...
No, you'd never guess, Andrew. That's not a shock.
Can you just tell people what you said to me when I came into your home? So I arrived here with my suitcase, with my podcasting equipment, because I'm a professional podcasting presenter. and Cass was like, do you want, you know, this? I'm like, no, do you want this and that? And what did you say to me?
So Andrew always just says I'm fine with water, and I offered him all sorts of different things, and I just said that when one first meets Andrew you might assume that he's high maintenance. But he's actually not at all.
I was shocked. High maintenance.
You're not. You're very low maintenance. It's why I love you.
Someone who is high on talent is the amazing Sandra Marvin, who is joining the West End production of Waitress. I love Sandra Marvin. So she is taking over as Becky for Marisha Wallace. Marisha left last week, and Sandra is joining on Thursday, the 17th of October. Sandra recently played Jessie Dingle in ITV's Emmerdale for 2 years. I'm sure there was someone somewhere who was like, no, this is stunt casting. And of course, we all know it is not, because Sandra is an acclaimed stage actress. She has been in so many shows over the years. She was most recently, I think, Queenie in Showboat when that transferred to the West End. That's her last kind of big musical role. She was in City of Angels at the Donmar. She played Mama Mortem in Chicago at Leicester Curve. And she was Mortemouth in Hairspray for years and years and years as well. She's done lots of stuff, lots of other stuff on stage. And I'm so excited that we get to have her back in the West End.
That's amazing. So this is going to be her first role since Emmerdale.
I think she just did a play regionally for a couple of months with Colleen Nolan somewhere. This is her first big musical role.
Wow.
So you love a bit of Waitress, right?
I love a bit of Waitress. I'm really pleased that it seems to be, I mean, I don't know, but it seems to be kind of picking up in terms of, you know, every time that I've been recently, it's been pretty busy. And I actually quite like what they're doing with the kind of the casting at the minute. You know, I quite like what they're doing with the role of Ogie. They seem to be following what Broadway did with Dr. Pometer in terms of, you know, the more stunt type casting. I know Waitress is closed over there now, or closing.
Closing in January.
Yeah, so obviously long term it's not worked, but...
But no, but it's had an amazing 4-year run, and it opened the same year as Hamilton, and everything else that could have opened in that same season didn't really last at all. It has such incredible heart, and it really speaks to people, and the score is absolutely stunning. And yeah, I think on Broadway, a lot of shows have actors on shorter contracts and coming and going, and that's kind of the way that it works. It's not a big deal or a big surprise, and it seems to be following that Broadway structure, which I think people over here are just not used to, and people are like, oh, why is someone leaving after this amount of time? Why are people leaving all individually? What's happening? And it's just, you know, obviously everyone's on different contracts and different agreements, and people can come and go. And I think that keeps it fresh and exciting, and it's bringing lots of new people into the audience.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really good. I like to go back regularly to see Waitress, so I'm sure I'll go back and see what Sandra's like.
I still haven't seen Lucy Jones.
Wow. You need to see Lucy. Lucy.
She's amazing.
She's incredible.
I need
to go. She really is. On Broadway, I saw Stephanie Tornes. So Jessie Mueller wasn't on when I went. And Stephanie Tornes was incredible. I do love a standby. I always have done.
She's amazing. And she's covered the role a lot. She's been on a lot.
She has, yeah. She was awesome. And then obviously saw Kat McPhee. But I think Lucy Jones actually is probably my favourite. If I had a favourite, it would probably be Lucy.
I'm going to go.
I think what I love about Lucy joining the cast is the dynamic between her and David Hunter is just really amazing. And I think it might be because of their relationship in real life. You know, they're good friends and things, but it really plays out. Mm. And I love that.
In interviews, they're really good fans.
Yeah, and I just think that kind of seems to penetrate through the whole cast. So I think whoever else comes and goes, that feeling, that vibe, you can really see it on stage. So I'm sure Sandra's going to have a great time. That's such a good role.
You've sold it to me. You've sold it. I'm going. We have lots of casting news. So Sophie Isaacs, who was, of course, in Heathers. Janine Davitsky from Benidorm and Lauren Stroud from Strictly Ballroom will join the previously announced Julian Clary, Paul O'Grady and Matt Baker in this year's London Palladium Pantomime, which is Goldilocks and the Three Bears. They're going to have a whale of a time. Rebecca Traherne and Angie Langtree have joined the cast of A Christmas Carol at the Old Vic, which is back for the third year. It's a beautiful production.
Wow.
And then we have Maz Murray, Jerome Praydon have joined Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella at Cadogan Hall on Sunday, the 20th of October. See you there. Well, I'm always at Cadogan Hall, and I always see you at Cadogan Hall.
I know, I love Cadogan Hall. Well, I mean, I love the people that they bring to Cadogan Hall, yeah. Basically. I think it's amazing.
In other news, we have Grease and the Commitments. They're embarking on a tour in 2020. And then a little bit of exciting news. So Berlin Girl is transferring to London following its premiere at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. The show is going to be presented by the Eastern Edge Theatre Company, and the musical is set to run at the New Wimbledon Theatre Studio between Wednesday the 22nd and Sunday the 25th of April 2020. Right, it's time for some show talk. So, this week I finally went to the Gielgud Theatre to see Les Mis, the all-star staged concert. So while the what formerly was the Queen's Theatre has its refurbishments and transforms into the Sondheim Theatre, ready for Les Mis to go back with the brand new production, the show has moved next door to the Gielgud, and we have the most luxurious cast Les Mis has perhaps ever had. We have Alfie Berg, Jean Valjean, Michael Bord as Javert, Carrie Hope Fletcher as Fontaine, Matt Lucas, although he wasn't on when I went, as Thénardier, Katie Seacombe as Madame Thénardier, Rob Houcham as Marius, Bradley Jade as Enjolras, John Aaron Jones as the alternate Jean Valjean. I mean, it's just the most brilliant cast. Shan Aiko was brilliant as Eponine. I thought it was going to be kind of more them standing at the front singing into mics.
Yeah.
But it really was far more kind of semi-stage, as they say, than I thought it was. There was beautiful moments when they were acting it out, and it was mind-blowing.
So did you find that nothing was really lost with it not being fully staged?
No, I mean, obviously there were some things I missed at the end of One Day More, the choreography, you know, there was like a V shape, but it was like static.
Did they still wave the flag?
I didn't think, this is a spoiler, if you're going to skip forward, if you're going to go and see it, the flag was like projected at one point, and I was like, no, I was like, that isn't enough. And then the final moments, they got up the flag and they waved the flag.
Amazing.
And the flag had its moments, so the flag is still in use. I haven't seen Les Mis for a couple of years. I last saw it on Broadway with John Owen Jones, and he was just flawless and incredible. And I just think I'd forgotten how immense Les Mis is.
Yeah.
I think we almost take it for granted, don't we? I mean, it really is. I wasn't emotionally prepared to go on that journey. Maybe it was because it was the concert, I was a bit more relaxed. Yeah. But it really got me and it really swept me in. And at the end of the 3 hours, I was just exhausted emotionally and physically. I mean, I know I've interviewed people before and they say that it's empowering and you come off with lots of adrenaline, but I really do not know how they do perform it 8 times a week because it is an emotionally draining show.
It is. I think I've met a lot of people recently who have actively, you know, said they hate Les Mis. And I understand how it's not everyone's cup of tea because, like you say, it's so intense, it's so emotional. Everybody wants that when they go to the theatre. But nobody can deny, you know, even if you're watching it and thinking this isn't really for me, just how incredible the music is, and when you do see it fully staged, how great the staging is, and just how clever and how bold it is. And I think it's aged really well. I mean, I guess that's why they've reimagined it, and it will be going in with new set design and stuff into the Sondheim Theatre. But even still, with the old setup, I think it's just aged so well.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's about the music, ultimately. I think just that music is just so powerful. And to sit, I once saw it in the front row at the Queen's, and to sit there, it really just blows you away. You feel it. You feel every note. What I really loved about this production, first of all, the leading cast are all-star, but also the ensemble is all-star. So you have people who have been in Les Mis over the years who have played lead roles suddenly in the ensemble.
Yeah.
And I think Les Mis is a great show for people to make their West End debuts in, and there's often quite new, fresh talent in there. And we had a couple of West End debuts from the actresses playing Eponine and Cosette, which is wonderful. But what I really loved about this concert is that the ensemble was a real mixture of all ages, all different people, and I was kind of there was more older actors in there than normal. When I say older, I mean people who aren't like 22, 23.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. I really thought that added to it, and you had all these different people here belting out these different songs, and I thought that worked really well. And I do hope that follows through to the Sondheim Theatre.
Yeah.
And they don't just cast people who are fresh out of drama school in it. And for me, the star of the show was Bradley Jayden as Honduras. His voice, it's so strong.
I'm not sure I've seen him in
anything. So powerful. He was a Fiero in Wicked.
Yeah.
But he was previously Honduras in Les Mis. And then he was playing Javert at the Queen's, and now he's back to playing Honduras, and he's going back to playing Javert again soon when it transfers back.
I did not know that.
So he was brilliant. And then Rob Houchin as well is just, he's an amazing actor, and he just is Marius. Yeah. He kind of brings his quirkiness to it, but just the right amount. Carrie Hope Fletcher, I thought, was brilliant as Fontaine. How I Dreamed a Dream was incredibly powerful. It was stunning, and she belted out some of those notes, but just kept it really raw and emotive and simple. I think I Dreamed a Dream it represents the entire show. It kind of shows you that you just need to just sing the notes and tell the story, and then everything else is done for you.
Yeah, I think she's great. She performed at the BBC Proms.
Yes.
With
Shan Aker.
Yeah, and they did like a mashup of I Dreamed a Dream and
On My Own.
And it was amazing. It was so good. It was really stripped back. It was obviously just them in the middle of a stage with massive orchestra. It was awesome. It was so, so good.
Especially cool for her because she obviously has played both roles.
Yeah.
So just thinking of mashup of those songs is really cool.
I'm really excited to see it. I'm seeing it in a couple of weeks.
Oh, good.
I saw Alfie Beau, Jean Valjean, in 2011 when he did it, when Matt Lucas was also Thénardier. So I've seen them both in those roles. But I am still yet to see John Owen Jones as Jean Valjean. And ever since I've seen John Owen Jones as the Phantom, and became aware that, you know, he's been in and out of Phantom and Les Mis for you know, his entire career, I've made it my mission to one day see him as Jean Valjean. So it's got to happen if there are still tickets left.
John Owen Jones and Ramin Caramelou are probably my two favourite Jean Valjeans. I saw them both on Broadway. And they both just have these insane voices. But I do like that all these different actors bring completely different things to these roles.
I saw both of them as the Phantom, fun fact. So do you remember the Phantom, was it the 25th anniversary? And they did it at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yes. Yeah, that
was so I was invited along to the dress rehearsal.
Stop.
And
how?
Just through a friend in the industry. It's all about who you know, darling. I'm surprised you weren't there, to be honest.
This is pre West End Frame, I think.
To be fair, you probably barely born at that point. But anyway, so I went to the dress rehearsal. So Ramin was technically my first ever Phantom. However, we had some issues and it overran. So we didn't ever end up getting a dress rehearsal of the second act at all.
No.
Because they had to get rid of us all because the actual audience were coming in for the actual show. So then I went to see it in the West End, and John Owen Jones technically is my first full show Phantom.
I see.
Fun fact.
Les Mis, the All-Star Stage Concert, runs at the Guildford Theatre until Saturday the 30th of November 2019. If you want to get tickets, I also have some good news, because C-Plan is giving away two tickets for the 11th of November 7:30 performance of Les Mis, the All-Star Stage Concert. I love saying that title. So to enter that competition, you just need to log in or sign up to C-Plan and create a theatre wish list with at least three shows added. Links to share on Twitter or Facebook, as extra entries are included on the competition page. And you have until the 31st of October at midnight to enter. C-Plan will then contact the winner via email. Please note, Alfie Bow is not scheduled to perform at this date, which means you get John Owen Jones.
I might apply for this.
You should enter. So to enter, just go onto westendframe.co.uk, click on the picture of Les Mis, and then it will take you to where you go to enter the competition. So that is the performance of Les Mis, the All-Star Stage Concert, on the 11th of November at 7:30. Some very lucky person is going to win two tickets. Right, so also this week I went to a press launch, which was very fancy. I went to the press launch of High Fidelity, which is opening at the Turbine Theatre. We already discussed it a bit on the podcast, but it looked great. It's really interesting because this is a show that ran for about 2 weeks or something, maybe 10 days on Broadway. I think it closed literally on its opening night or just after. But it's got music by like Tom Kitt, who wrote like Next to Normal, lots of great shows. It starred Jane Colella, who was the original Beverly in Come From Away. And they performed the opening kind of number, which is like a 10-minute sequence, which sounded good. Oliver Ormsen, who is playing the lead role, he was in the Addams Family UK tour. He was great. And then I loved the song. And then they performed another kind of belty, fierce song led by Sinead Holmes, which I loved as well. And yeah, it was a nice little sneak peek into what's to kind of come. And I like the Turbine Theatre. You've been, right, haven't you?
I have been, yeah. I went to see Torch Song.
Did you get some pick and mix?
You know what? I think either I was blind that day or it was pre-pick and mix. So I went on the press night for Torch Song. So I guess the theatre would only have been open about maybe a week by that point. I don't know if the pick and mix was there. Did not see it, so I'm gutted.
It's amazing. It's not like pick and mix. It's like you get like little cups of sweets.
Like a vintage, it's all different. Yeah. Kind of old school.
It's all like from the theatre cafe. Yeah, it's like brilliant.
Yeah, the theatre itself, and in fact the whole surrounding that redevelopment, is so edgy millennial. I can't even, you know, like if you're, you know, 30 or below, you're just gonna love it because it's just so edgy.
Once you find it.
I actually didn't have any issues finding it, so maybe that's just you, Andrew.
It took me about 20 minutes of walking around and running around in circles. I was sweating.
It's really nice though, isn't it? Surrounded by like nice bars, and there's a lovely little bar in the theatre as well, up the stairs. Really nice little space.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you walk into the theatre up the stairs.
So as you go into as you're walking through, so you walk through a corridor, listeners, you walk through a corridor to get to the main space, but on the right hand side there's a staircase and you go up and there's a bar up there.
Oh, I had no idea. Because I actually spent the day there on Thursday. So I was doing, I recorded an episode of our other podcast series, In the Frame. And then I had about 2 hours to kill. So I was walking around the area, which is all brand new, at Battersea Power Station. And I had some very swanky lunch somewhere. And then, yeah, went back to the theatre. And then got the boat there and back as well. I went along the Thames to get there.
But yeah, I love the theatre. I think it's really great. And I'm excited to see this. So I am seeing High Fidelity.
We'll be talking more about it on the show. The other thing that I went to see this week was Islander, which is transferred to the Southwark Playhouse following its run at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this summer. So this literally, when I was at the Fringe this summer, everyone was like, have you seen Islander? Have you seen Islander? And I was like, no. And it was on at 10 a.m. in the morning and I was commuting to Edinburgh from Glasgow and it was just a bit too early and it was sold out and I didn't have enough time and I missed it. So I was so happy when they announced that the show was transferring to the Southwark Playhouse. So the show is about this character, Ailey, who basically is on this island. It's an imaginary, made-up island. And she is staring out to sea and she dreams of this new life. And then myth and reality collide when a tide washes in a mysterious stranger onto her beach. That's all I'm going to say. It is done in a smaller space at a Southwark Playhouse, and it is literally just these two actresses who tell the story. It is Kirsty Findlay and Bethany Tennick, and it is just them. It's a musical. There's no orchestra, no band. The only accompaniment they have is this sound looping technology. So have you ever seen this kind of technology used? They have, so basically they use these microphones and they'll sing like a beat or a phrase into the microphone, and then it'll loop, and then they'll sing over the top of it, like harmonizing or something. So then suddenly,
oh okay, yeah, like Ed Sheeran does that.
Yes, yeah.
So when people were saying, oh, it's not, you know, when Ed Sheeran performs, he does that on his own on stage with his, yeah. Okay, I get
so
it.
They build up these amazing atmospheres, and using this technology they create this whale. They create all sorts of different effects of the island and the beach, and then they create some stunning harmonies. And it is literally just them and this technology, and it's raw storytelling. And it's actually quite, I mean, it was lovely, and then it was actually kind of powerful in places. And there were some moments when I was like, oh, no. And it took me kind of on its journey, and I was really pleased to have seen it. I was really pleased that it's transferred to London. And I was very lucky, because before I went to see the show, I went backstage and I got to speak to the lovely Kirsty and Bethany about the show. And this is what they had to say. Okay, so girls, introduce yourselves.
So I'm Kirsty Findlay.
And I'm Bethany Tennick.
And we are the cast of Islander.
It's like you're a little girl band.
Little mix.
So this show, I know very little about it. And I don't want to know too much. I think it sounds like one of those shows that it's better if you go fresh and you don't know too much. But what's so interesting to me is that when you both auditioned, it hadn't been fully created yet. It was still being devised, right? So what was your first impression, and when did you kind of realise that it was going to be something special?
So when I first auditioned for it, I've said this a couple of times, the only information I knew was that it was a musical, that we used loop stations, which I had no clue about, and that it had a boy and a girl in it, and there would possibly be some whales. So
I've heard a lot about these whales.
There's a whales. Do you know what? Me and Beth were saying, we've had so many text messages through about this whale in the Thames. Because everyone's like, oh, it's following your show. I'm like, uh-huh, yeah, it is. Uh-huh. Anyway, but yeah, the show didn't exist. So it was really...
Is that exciting? Is it scary? Because
it's exciting. It depends. Like, I think you try and get a vibe from the team in the room to see if they're... like on it, especially from the director, to see what direction they're going to take it in, because I mean, I've done a lot of devised work in the past and it can go really, really badly wrong if no one knows what they're doing in it. But just the whole concept was so fascinating and so imaginative and stripped back, and just the basics of storytelling, which is the kind of theatre that I like seeing anyway.
What was the kind of initial then rehearsal process like? Because I know after that first audition process, it was a boy and a girl, and then when the roles got changed, it was two girls. So I imagine you got to really see it be shaped and be formed, right?
Yeah. Well, two girls was a very pleasant surprise, I must say. And then we all got shipped off to the Isle of Mull in Scotland, off the west coast, which is just beautiful. And it was Kirsty and I and our writer, our composer, Finn Anderson, and our director, Amy Draper. And there was loads of improv in the room, wasn't there? We had our kind of two main characters that we play. I play Ailey and Kirsty plays Aaron. And they just gave us a butt ton of improvs and just was like, they just said, oh, you do this, and they recorded it and wrote stuff down. Finn Anderson got to listen to us sing and then wrote the songs kind of based on our voices, which is such a privilege. Yeah, it was a very collaborative process. And Amy was really, really good at using everybody's voice in the room.
We only had 3 weeks to devise the whole thing. However, neither myself nor Beth had used a loop station before, which is our kind of main instrument in the show, I'll say.
I'm fascinated about this.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what your opinion is on it. But it's like, it is like learning a new instrument. It's its own kind of beast. But I had no idea about any music technology. So learning this as a new skill within 3 weeks, while creating a show, while learning the show and making these characters was insane. It was stressful, but it was definitely worth it because we came out of it with something that was so imaginative and people really enjoyed, which was great.
Talk to me about this looping technology that you use. Have things gone wrong? I want the gossip. Like, how have you got to grips with it?
Well, it really is like learning a new instrument, apart from it's a new instrument where if you press a button, you're screwed. bit of gossip, not really gossip, on press night, the last time we did this on the Isle of Mull, so there's a wee button on our main loop station that's like, you know the keyboards that you used to have in school, where if you press it, it's a little beat button, it goes like, I pressed that on press night, and I had no idea what I'd done, no idea at all. There was panic-stricken faces, we were looking at each other, but I think, not to boost ourselves, but we're quite good at keeping our cool when things go wrong on stage, because it is just the two of us, and I just pressed lots of buttons until it stopped, and then we just carried on, but that's the worst of the worst, I think, that's ever happened.
Yeah. I think some of the, I say best and worst because luckily we know how to work it out, but because audience members are real people and they can make noises and some people bring their children in and we record it live, like babies have been caught on it, ringtones a couple of times have been caught on it. Yeah. But and me and Beth are trying to think, like, what track is that recorded on? How can we take that down so that, because otherwise it gets really annoying to hear a baby cry over and over again for 4 minutes. So we have to work it out.
So then you get to the Fringe. Were you expecting for you to have this incredible response? Because it really did spiral and it was sold out. Everyone I spoke to was like, you have to see this show. I was like, I can't, I have no time left. And then you won the Musical Theatre Reviews Award for best musical at the Fringe. So what was that month like for you?
So in the beginning, I was really worried about doing a show at 10 in the morning. One, because it's really hard to sing this show so purely at 10 in the morning, but mostly because I didn't know what kind of audience to expect for a 10 o'clock show in the morning. Yeah. I mean, the show is family friendly, but it's not made for children. You can bring children, but it's for all ages. So I was just worried that we weren't going to get the numbers because it was 138 seater at Roundabout. But we had an amazing response. We were full pretty much after our first week, after previous finished, we were really full. And the response we got was, it was amazing.
What do you think it is about this show that is talking to people, that is giving people so much to take away?
Well, I think that the core themes of the show, like myth and friendship and what home means to different people, I think is a really, really universal thing. If you're not British or you're not Scottish or you're not from an island, that those things still really, really resonate with you. And I think the structure of the show, the fact that it's a two-hander, that it's a cappella, that it's these loop pedals, it's such a unique experience. Like, I've never seen anything that's made like this before. And the fact that it's in the round as well.
For me, I know definitely it takes the experience of it being in the round and having literally no set kind of takes you back to just storytelling as a child.
Pure storytelling.
Pure storytelling, absolutely using your imagination. And obviously having the sounds on top of it aids that and enhances that. But having nothing to see means that every audience member gets a different experience.
I mean, the two of you must have been on such a journey together. And I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds like it's very exposing. It's just the two of you up there. Literally, you are the band, you are the actors, you're the ensemble, you're doing all the roles. So what journey have you two been on together? Because you must have this like amazing psychic trust between you.
That is something that we've noticed in some of the reviews it's been picked up on, and we're glad that it has, because we need to trust each other to make this show work. And I'm safe to say, well, from my point of view, that I definitely trust Beth. We know that if anything goes wrong, that the other person will fix it, or if one person is, I don't know, not feeling well that night, the other person's going to help pick that up, because the show is about human connection. That's what it's about, and it's been cast very well that that's something that's both incredibly important to both of us.
Like within the show, we double as narrators and storytellers and the characters, so there is that kind of like complicity between the two of us. And also at this point we've lived together and devised together and performed together for not straight for a year, but it's been over a year since the inception of Islander. So we've done so much together, and we have built the show with the writers and the director, but with each other as well. And it's really, we were saying the other day, it's really lucky that we actually like each other, because imagine if they cast us and I was like, oh, I hate her, do you know what I mean? So yeah, we've been really, really lucky in that. Really lucky.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much to Bethany and Kirsty for taking the time to chat to me. They were so lovely and the show is brilliant. So Islander runs at the Southwark Playhouse until Saturday the 26th of October. Right, it's time to talk all things Broadway. So you're a bit of a Broadway buff, aren't you, Kaz?
Not really, not as much as you.
How many times have you been to New York?
I've only been twice.
I mean, a lot of people were like, only twice, I want to go once.
Yeah, sure.
So what was your first experience is when you went to see...
I saw Waitress, and then on that same trip, I saw Something Rotten.
Which I love. And the same writers are writing the Mrs. Doubtfire musical.
Oh, wow.
Which is about to have its little out-of-town tryout.
I did not know that.
So I'm you should be paying attention to the podcast.
Oh, I know, I must have glazed over at that point. Sorry, Andrew.
And then what did you see second time?
Frozen.
And why did you go to New York that time? See Frozen?
Well,
right?
Yeah, mainly. So I was on my way to Cayman Islands to see some family, which sounds way posher than it actually is. But I decided to do a layover in New York because I really wanted to see Frozen. And I'd never seen Casey Levy in anything, and everybody had ranted and raved about how amazing she was when she was over here. And I never got to see Ghost. I never got to see Hair. Well, I say I never got to, I just didn't get around to it. So I spent 15 hours in New York. I landed, went to see the show, and then had to get up at 4 a.m. to fly to Grand Cayman. So yeah, all I did was I got there, I drank wine, I saw Frozen, and that was it. And it was amazing. And Casey Levy is incredible, as is Patty Murin and the rest of the cast, obviously.
And then what did you get to do recently?
Got to interview Casey Levy.
So Casey Levy was coming over to Cadogan Hall. We went together to go and see her. Her big return to London, and a few weeks before you got to interview Casey.
I did.
And that was your first ever interview.
It was my first kind of, you know, big, well, my first interview, really. And that was a big one to start off with.
What was she like?
So she was just like, she's just badass, you know? And I think you can tell a lot from, you know, kind of her social media. She's very vocal. She's very opinionated. You know, she speaks about what she believes in. So I kind of knew going in that I didn't want this interview to be kind of like the standard kind of questioning, because I think there's just so much more to her as a person than that. And yeah, it was incredible. We talked a lot about Frozen and her upcoming concert, which was the main reason we were talking, obviously, to promote what she was doing at Cadogan Hall.
We spoke about other things.
We spoke about all sorts of things, about her career and what it's like being a mother, all sorts of things. Her politics, kind of diversity and representation in theatre, all sorts of things. So it's really, it just, you know, just two people having a chat, and she's what I like about her is that she's just not filtered at all. Mm-hmm. She is who she is. And that, I think, bleeds into all of her roles. And I think that's why she is, as I said in my kind of, I think my review of her show, is she's one of the greats because she's got the talent, but she's not filtered with any kind of PR, you know, she just is who she is.
Yeah, I love going to concerts
when
you have someone who really will tell their story or tell you their opinions on things or tell you little nuggets, like little gold nuggets of information. I love people like Casey Levy, who aren't afraid to speak their mind a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. She spoke about, you know, she didn't reveal anything, but friends of hers that have been cast in the Broadway company that haven't been announced yet. And she talked about when she got cast in Waitress over there and had to turn it down because Frozen came up. You know, none of this stuff, I don't think, you know, none of it, she wasn't, there was no gag rule order on her for doing it, but I don't think many people knew about this stuff. And she's just happy to talk about it and be really open about the industry and her experiences. And I think that's really great and probably really inspiring to a lot of people that want to do what she does.
People, you want to read it, go onto Broadway World UK.
Yes.
I'm sure if you search in Casey Levy, it'll pop up. Maybe we'll tweet it as well.
Yes, let's do that.
So you're going to do more interviews now. You've got the interviews back.
Yep, if Marianka lets me.
Marianka, I know you're listening. give Kaz some more interviews. Talking of interviews, our new interview series launched last week. So the first episode of In the Frame dropped on Friday. Thank you so much to everyone who listens. Also the lovely Keith Jack, who's currently in fame as Nick. This Friday, we have a new episode dropping with Oliver Saville, who was a former Fiero. He's currently in falsettos. Make sure you search In the Frame on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe, and over the next 10 weeks, there'll be lots more interviews on the way. And anyway, we're supposed to be talking about Broadway. I just digressed. And it's some self-promotion, which is disgusting. So before we all vomit, let's talk about Idina Menzel's wicked new role. So Idina Menzel is in talks to play the wicked stepmother in the upcoming movie musical adaptation of Cinderella. This is so exciting. Not only that, Billy Porter has been confirmed to be playing the fairy godmother.
Oh my lord.
This is going to be the film that ends my life.
This is amazing.
It's amazing. I love that suddenly musical movies are everywhere.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is going to be brilliant. They better be writing a belty new song for Idina Menzel too.
I mean, they will, I'm sure.
But I'm sure it'll be in her contract. Yeah. So that has to happen. There's also been some other exciting kind of American TV and movie news. So David Diggs, who was in the original cast of Hamilton, is apparently in talks to play Sebastian in the Little Mermaid film. And also Amber Riley has been cast in the Little Mermaid live. So there's two Little Mermaids going on at the moment, which is very confusing. But yeah, there's so much exciting stuff. I can't wait to see it all.
Yeah, I love all these live action remakes.
And Cinderella, I'm here for it. Mm-hmm. I'm here for it. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kaz.
Thank you.
This has been so much fun. We have been so naughty.
And I didn't swear once.
No, I don't even have to bleep anything out. You haven't sworn, let's rephrase that, yet, because I have a present for you.
Oh, here we go.
So you know what I'm going to give you because you listen to the show. However, people who listen regularly will know this box that the West End Frame mugs come in, the West End Frame show mugs, is notoriously hard to open. So Kaz, see if you can open your present. You're going to understand now what people go through.
Yeah, people get very stressed out doing this, and I've always wondered why.
Oh. I think it's all in tearing the white thing off. Oh, there you go.
I'm in. I'm in, people. I'm in.
Ah. So Kaz, her very own West End Frame Show mug.
I mean, this is the only reason I'm doing this podcast.
You just wanted the mug.
I love it. Thank you.
Yay.
I can put my wine in this.
Yes. I should have given it to you at the start.
I've been drinking red wine during this business.
So Kaz, where can people find you on social media, etc.?
I am at Kaz Cronin on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And that's it? Instagram?
I do have Instagram, but it's private, Andrew.
So guys, don't search for Kaz.
You can't access
Kaz does naughty things on their Instagram. Right, so follow Kaz on Twitter. You'll be able to stay up to date with all of her reviews. Hopefully, fingers crossed, some more interviews. And she's also very funny and says lots of great stuff, so you're going to love following her. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the West End Frame Show. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating, leave a little review, and make sure you hit that subscribe button and tell all of your stagey friends. This Friday on In The Frame, our other podcast, I'll be interviewing the lovely Oliver Saville from Wicked and Les Mis about his career and his current role in falsettos. Head over to westendframe.co.uk to stay up to date with all of our podcasting adventures, and you can also enter our lovely Les Mis competition. And make sure you follow West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, and I'll be back next week for another stagey catch up.